What's going on, guys? It's Chris Pond, Dorm Room Biz here. I've got a great podcast for you today featuring Mike Michalowicz. He's a very interesting entrepreneur to speak with, and you'll be reading some more about him on the blog. You've probably seen him leaving some comments. But more importantly, today's conversation was about the issues of deciding how and when to expand your business. And it's kind of focused on my experiences with my eBay business. However, the information that we talk about and the ideas that he gives can definitely apply to any sort of industry, any sort of business that you're running, whether it's online or offline. And hopefully you guys can pick something up good up from it. And if you like it, leave some comments. If you don't like it, please leave some comments. And if you've got any other questions or, you know, tips that you might have for expanding your business or deciding how to, please feel free to leave some comments. I'd love to see some discussion about the podcast, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So, Mike, go ahead and tell me a little bit about yourself, your background, where you went to school, and what you're doing now.
Sure. So, I'm a graduate of Virginia Tech, and when my background, when I came out of school, my goal was to work for the one of the Big Six companies. It's actually, Arthur Anderson was interviewing me. I was all jazzed up and couldn't wait to throw on my suit. And I'll never forget this. I went through the interview process with them, and on the they invited me up there, and I think on the third or fourth person I was interviewing, and he said, "You know, Mike, you're not a fit, and get out." And I was shocked. My kind of world fell apart, and I was graduating college with no job because I had banked everything on this. And what happened, I went back home and got a little internship at a local place. I'd been working at a little computer store. And was working there, and one night had some drinks with another guy that worked there, and we said, you know, why aren't we doing this on our own? We can make our own, you know, start our own business and make more money, and we're tired of working for the man and all this stuff. So we left the company the next morning. I still hung over from the night's drinks, and I resigned and started my own company. And I thought I was smarter than the guy I was working for. It seemed so easy to run a business, and found out it really wasn't. So I spent my first entrepreneurial venture going with total ignorance, didn't know what I was doing. I literally had just got married at that point and had my first son. I got married very young. I was 24 and had a child. And, with launching a business. And the best part about it was I was in a position where, you know, I'd burned the boats. I couldn't fail. You know, I had to make this succeed. So, that's why it succeeded. Desperation's the mother of invention. And we grew into a multi-million-dollar business, and then I subsequently sold that. Then my second venture out of there was in computer forensics. I met another guy that was doing some research, and saw this is kind of a hot field. I did some research on the Internet, and literally within a day said, this is it. And we started the business that day. It wasn't much research. It wasn't much else too. We just knew it was going to go, and it went. We grew bootstraps organically, and within less than 3 years, we sold it to a Fortune 500. Excuse me. I bought it for a substantial amount of money, and then that moved me on to my next venture, which is now called Obsidian Launch. And what I do is invest in, or really partner with startup, generally collegiate age entrepreneurs, people that are starting their first business. And the idea is we share our experience, knowledge, our network of contacts to help grow their businesses, but we also have an infrastructure that we supply. So the bookkeeping we do for them, the marketing, the legal work is all done for them so that the entrepreneur can really focus in on the area of their talent, exploit their strengths, do what they do best, and as their business starts maturing, we start transferring over to their staff as they hire people. Our bookkeeping service now goes internal. We train them on what we did, and now they take it over. So we consider ourselves kind of a hybrid between an incubator and a venture capital firm. And that's kind of my entrepreneurial journey.
Very cool. You've definitely had some experience and seem to know what you're talking about. So I'm looking forward to discussing the topic of, you know, deciding how and when to expand your business to the next level.
Yeah. Okay, appreciate it.
And I guess as a young entrepreneur, for me at least, there's always this urge to, you know, expand and grow and reach as many customers as I can. And I'm constantly thinking about what I can do to take my business to the next level. And, you know, that's always going through my head. It's something that keeps me up at night. And it's, right. it's really hard to decide, you know, if you, if I should expand or how I should expand. And, you know, that's probably one of the hardest decisions for a young collegiate entrepreneur to have.
Right.
And from my background, you know, being a, being an eBay person and running this eBay business that was set up to sell things on consignment for people, and changing gears into selling more, focused on the niche of outdoor equipment and, you know, camping gear and that kind of thing. So I've been finding a lot of roadblocks in my path, you know, deciding if I should expand and how to expand. And the main one for me there is that, you know, I really do need to expand in some capacity to reach more customers and make more money, which, you know, is what everybody's after. You know, that's always the bottom line. And, probably the top problem for me as a small business on eBay and selling strictly on eBay is that I can't get the adequate amount of inventory that, you know, somebody who has a outfitter shop that sells on eBay as well would be able to. And the big thing with that is, you know, it's hard for me personally as a small guy to set up a dealer, you know, a dealer account with a, you know, name brand manufacturer such as the North Face or Mountain Hardware, these different companies. And, basically they, you know, they say, and many of them told me the same thing, you know, we're worried about having too many people selling our equipment and kind of destroying our name and, you know, selling it for a lot lower price than what, somebody like Dick's Sporting Goods or REI might be selling the gear for. And so being able to secure, you know, a dealer account with these companies is really holding me back. And if I can get that set up, the other problem is, being able to establish a line of credit with them. And so far with everything that I've been purchasing from other companies, you know, I'm paying with a credit card, which is probably a very bad idea to begin with. But I can't get a line of credit with any of these manufacturers because I have no other lines of credit to reference to. You know, these companies say that I need, you know, either two or three or four other references that they can check to make sure that I pay on time and, you know, I deal well with them and that kind of thing. So that's holding me back from expanding, I guess you could say. And so I guess what I've been trying to do recently is identify as many different manufacturers and distributors as I can to see which ones I can go after and which one there's a market for on eBay and off eBay, but, you know, on the internet in general, where I can try and secure their products and be a dealer of theirs, and kind of work my right way around having that credit line established. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, what I've been doing is paying by credit card, and some companies are saying, you know, okay, pay with by credit card for a few months, and as everything works out and you become, you know, a loyal buyer, they'll think about establishing that credit. And that's kind of gotten me into the mindset of, okay, you know, here goes another payment on the credit card, here goes more money out that hopefully I can, you know, sell this equipment and get that money back. So I guess I just want to get your thoughts on, you know, what can a young entrepreneur do when they reach that standpoint of, oh my God, I need to expand and I need to, you know, take things to the next level.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's funny. I just had a meeting today, just leaving this afternoon, and that was the whole discussion was around, you know, how do I expand? How do I expand? And I think that's what everyone's trying to do. And I'm a little bit of a contrarian, meaning if everyone's doing something, I believe in going a different direction. Because if everyone's running to the trough for food, it's going to be a big fight to get food. Why don't you run and get water now? Fill up on water, and then when they come running for the water to satisfy their thirst, you're running over and getting the food. So, you know, when it comes to expansion, that's what everyone on eBay is trying to do. So that, I think, is an opportunity then to go deep. These people are trying to go broad, right? Offer more product variety is one thing they're trying to do. The second thing is they're trying to compete on price. You know, if I'm just 10 cents cheaper than the other guy, people will come to me. So I say, well, shit, if everyone's fighting on price, let them knock their skulls in fighting over price. I'm going to be the best quality guy. You're going to have like a service experience with me that's so freaking good that customers will come flooding to me regardless of the price. And or I'm not going to offer the widest product variety. I'm going to offer the most narrow product variety, but I'm going to so over-service it that I'm going to stand out. So I encourage, and what we're, the strategy we're talking with this afternoon, with this one client we have, is how do we go more narrow? And I encourage an entrepreneur, when they're in the position saying, I got to go bigger, ask a different question. How do I get tighter? How do I better service what I have, and how do I offer even less? Just to add to it, there was a famous economist in Italy named Pareto, and he came up with the 20-80 rule. A lot of people have heard of this. You know, 20% of your revenue comes from 80% of your clients, but 80% of your revenue is coming from a mere 20% of your clients. I'm really curious, who is that 20% of clients that are generating 80% of my revenue? Or, out of the, say you're selling 20 products, 20% of those products are selling 80% of the time. So that means out of 20 products, only 4 are selling the majority of the time. I put all my attention on those 4 and then service the living crud out of those so that I am known on eBay as being the best service guy, the greatest guy for delivering on something. And I would then saturate or focus all my marketing on that. For example, I like cars. So I have one of my cars is a Viper, you know, it's like high performance sports cars. So the Viper, I'm on a forums and I'm in different areas and you know, just checking things out. And this one forum has maybe 2,000 members internationally that participate in it. There's only 2 guys out of those 2,000, you know, participants and stuff that are constantly talked about for their the parts and stuff that they sell and the quality service they deliver. While you can get parts from almost anybody out there, there's hundreds or thousands of competitors. These all those hundreds and thousands of competitors focus on all different Dodge products and different automobile products for trucks and so forth. But there's 2 guys that just do Vipers, and they're so well known that they get the vast majority of the Viper business. And while they have small companies, maybe they're $3 or $4 million companies, they can make fat margins because they're so good at servicing stuff that I will buy a product from them knowing it's slightly more expensive or it's a lot more expensive. But man, I know the service and the quality of the experience is so good, there's no way I consider anyone else. So maybe that's something to consider for what you're doing, and you know, anyone else that kind of checks out this interview, if they're going broad, maybe it's time to go narrow.
I think that's a good point. I think, you know, being able to provide the customer with a different level of service than, you know, they can get anywhere else is definitely a key, especially on a place like eBay where there's, you know, millions of people selling stuff and thousands of people selling the same category of stuff, and then, you know, there might be 50 or 100 people selling the exact same products as I am. And that's definitely one of the things I try and focus on. But I guess one of my other problems is that the products that I do sell now aren't the high profit products, I guess. They're the less expensive items to purchase. You know, something might cost me, you know, $10 and I'm able to sell it for $20. But what I want to get into is the higher, you know, the higher profit stuff that's, you know, more expensive, and the quality is still better. You know, like I just set up a dealer account with New England Ropes, which is a big manufacturer of climbing ropes and different things like that. And there's easily a $50 profit on pretty much any of their products. You know, it might cost me $100 just to get one rope that, you know, I might sell for $150 or something like that. There's that huge step to take to actually place that first order and, you know, get your feet wet in that large investment. I guess it's, you know, putting my mind around the idea of, okay, I have to shell out, you know, say $500 to do this. And then if it doesn't work, you know, I've got 4 or 5 climbing ropes sitting in my house that, you know, cost me less money and I can't get rid of, you know, I can't make my money back from it.
Oh, yeah. No, I hear you. There's a risk in that. You know, a strategy that I've used in my prior companies, is in any product category, there's generally lesser known brands. I mean, for climbing ropes, I'm sure there's like the generic stuff you could buy at any outdoor shop. Then there's higher end stuff and there's lower end stuff and then there's foreign stuff. Pick a category that isn't touched. And a classic move is to pick foreign or import stuff that no one's heard of. There was a company that did this with t-shirts, and regretfully I don't recall their name. Not t-shirts, with polo shirts. And what they did, that this one guy went to, I think it was Australia, and he bought shirts from Australia. They weren't polo shirts, they were rugby shirts, that was it. He bought rugby shirts from Australia and imported them in. And while you could buy a rugby shirt anywhere, these were genuine, true Australian rugby shirts that were used for rugby matches. They were hardcore. They weren't knockoffs. They weren't made in China. They were made in Australia. And he could charge like a 3 times or 4 times premium on the product. He was buying it for $40 from, you know, Australia, and he was selling these for $150, $200 here because it was such a unique item. His cost wasn't as expensive because it wasn't, you know, this company he was buying it from, it was like a retail store, and he was just buying small quantities, just like a retail guy. And then he started building a relationship, and I said, yeah, we'll do it. So can you buy, you know, climbing ropes that just no one else considers or has? And now you become this unique guy, and you can do some serious markups and avoid that initial big nut up front. I think it's scratching below the surface. It's going beyond the obvious. It's kind of going to the fringe. And what do the fringe people do? And that's where the margins are, generally in the fringe, not in the center where everyone's fighting.
I think that's an interesting point. Part of my fear of going that route, I guess, is that with something as focused and as I guess high risk, you could say, with going rock climbing, people that are purchasing the equipment and the gear want that name brand because they know, you know, it stands for quality, it stands for,
right,
you know, being a lifesaver, literally. You know, if you're dangling off the side of a mountain, you don't want to be using a no-name brand rope that,
right,
you know, you don't know if it's been tested to a certain weight limit or if it would hold,
right,
you falling 20 feet, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So there's some areas that I'd be afraid to kind of go into the no-name brand of.
Yep.
And that's, you know, obviously specific for my niche of camping equipment. But if you were dealing in another area or another category, you know, the no-name brand route is probably a very good option.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, the majority of any market wants the product that the majority is buying. That's true with anything. You know, sneakers, you know, Nike, Adidas, and, you know, whoever, Converse or something, owns 80% of the market. But since the majority is buying that, the safety, the comfort, all the protection is felt with staying with what's normal, what everyone else is doing. And that's true in everything, especially, you know, risk sports like rock climbing. But there's always opportunities on the fringe that there's first people that aren't concerned with going with certain products because the majority is doing it. And there may be people saying, you know, I do want a safe rope, of course, but I need a rope that provides certain unique functions that the standard stuff just doesn't provide. You know, I only rock climb when it's pouring rain outside and the standard rope absorbs water. It makes it actually dangerous. I need a water repellent rope. I'm making this up as I go. But, you know, there's that unique fringe. And the great thing about fringe buyers, that's the term I use for them, is that the main competition, the big boys, can't touch it because it's just too small of a market. And most of the small competitive startups don't think about it and they ignore it. And then a few remainders think it's too risky, so they ditch it. So it's the outer fringe, which is presumably the highest risk, has the least competition, and to me is actually the lowest risk. Staying where everyone else is the highest risk because you've run to the trough that everyone's gone to and have to fight for that last kernel of food. And I'm saying, just walk the other direction. And we don't know how much food's out there. We know there is some food out there. We don't know where, but we don't. No one else is looking for it, so your odds of success have increased dramatically because you're the only guy looking there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a good point.
I'll take it a little further. You know, our own business model is a fringe service. My company partners with startups, but we don't take any equity, and we only share in profit. What's unique about it is I'm a believer that no business owner should ever give away equity unless there's a gun to their head or there's such an overwhelming benefit. I mean, so overwhelming that it makes sense. But I would argue funding it from VCs and angels isn't necessarily a good reason to give away equity. Now, we are working with fringe people because everyone is starting a business, or most people are starting a business for the first time,